Accession number 18619, Reel 6.
After all the girls, well, I went over with him a couple of times and realised what he was doing, so I thought that that's enough of that. I packed that up, so I started going on my own. But what I had in mind was trying to get myself established in Civvy Street. Well, you know, I'm in a bit of a difficult position. At the start of the war, I was due to go to the Custom House, take up a job with them. I'd notified them to say that I'd been called up, and they wrote back and said they'd note that, and we hope you eventually come home, and when you do, get in touch with us. But, you see, when the war broke out, that job was for people of 16 years of age, and I was now 22. Incidentally, nothing was mentioned when I took that exam what the wages would be. It seemed to be an apprenticeship for a customs officer, although they didn't say so. But I realised I'd got to find something better than that. But in spite of it, I did write and tell them I was home, and they eventually wrote to me and offered me a post down in Wales somewhere. I didn't take it, because at that time I was doing well in all the directions. What happened was that I'll go and contact the Admiralty, see them, because they've been very good to my mother in keeping her posted as to what things were. And incidentally, when the war about 3 or 4 weeks before we set sail from Kingsdown on the south coast, we were all interviewed by the paymasters on that, and the question of making allotments. Well, mind you, I was only getting 15 shillings a week plus a certain amount for hard layers, as they call that. That is a special payment for any people living out in the open, out of tents, and it was laying on the ground. Well, anyway, I did a lot, 10 shillings a week, and that came through regularly to my mother, and she appreciated that very, very much. Actually, what she did, she used to send 10 shillings of that to me in Germany, knowing that they could transfer money to me. And of course, 10 shillings in those days could do a lot with. When it came through, I never knew exactly what I was getting. I think the most I ever got was 10 marks 60. Sometimes it was lower than that, but 10 marks it was quite useful. No, 12 marks 60. That was the highest I got during the war. Now where have I got to? I've gone off to be a member. That was the sort of money angle from or don't want to discuss with him, but not discuss with him, just express my appreciation for their regularity in sending money to my mother. And it was rather interesting that, of course, I was in full uniform, and it was only about the second week that I was I'd arrived home. I was walking up the front of the Admiralty in Whitehall, and just as I nearly got to the front door, who should come out but an admiral, rear admiral in full uniform, obviously going out to some function. And I thought, oh, blimey, this is a bit of a do. So I stepped out in the curb and saluted with my left hand. And he immediately said, "Seaman, come here." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "What do you mean, sir, salute me with left hand?" I said, "Well, sir, I was always taught that one saluted with a hand farthest away from the person one was saluted." He said, "Yes, that was, Sandor, but that was abolished in 1915. Weren't you instructed by your unit?" I said, "Well, I'm sorry, sir, but I have to tell you that I've only just come home from Germany. I've been out there since October 1914. Oh, my God, boy, you can understand now why you did that. And where were you stationed and all this sort of thing? Want no brief?" He said, "Well, I'm sorry. I wish to God I could sit down and talk to you for an hour or two." He said, "Sounds interesting." Anyway, best of luck for the future. Off he went. I got into the Admiralty, and the old keeper there, who I knew, he was there when I left for the war. He said, "You have no interest in conversation with that Rear Admiral." So I told him. He said, "Oh, how strange." Anyway, he put me through to the establishment people, and talking to them, and I said, "I realise, of course, that you can't employ me." And they said, "But I wonder whether you could give me some tips." Well, he said, "Well, yes, we can. There are a lot of people like you who were doing government jobs and got their careers stopped by going to the war," and he said, "and they're all shouting for jobs now." He said, "and they decided to form an association of ex-service civil servants, which I should imagine would be useful to you." He said, if you see Captain so-and-so, gave me his address and telephone number, he'll probably be able to help you." Well, I thought, well, right, I'll do that. As soon as I was out of the Admiralty, I did contact that man, and he was very helpful. He said, of course, the meeting or union or whatever you're going to call it is only its infancy, and we haven't exactly worked out a routine for work. He said, "But I can tell you this, we can fix you up for a temporary job for about 3 months, and by which time, of course, things will develop and something else will crop up after that." So he said, "I advise you to take that." So he arranged for me to go to the Army Pay Department. They were in a bit of a quandary because they were getting pay books from soldiers from overseas, and all that to be collected up, and worked out, and and dealt with so that the paymasters could do them without having to fidget about the, well, they're all cut and dried in part of the balances, and no ballots were there, all clear, and that went on for about 3 weeks. The unfortunate part, no, 3 months, the unfortunate part about it was that it was night work. Well, I'd never been doing night work before, but still, it was a job. And we carried on that. Well, when, getting toward after about 2.5 months, I got in touch with the Association of Ex-Civil Servants and asked them, was anything in the offing? Oh, he said, now, I think I've seen you before somewhere, but maybe, I don't know. He said, well, I think I'd like to help you as much as I could. Now, don't think me, of course you know the Ministry of Food is all now closed down eventually, but they've got a lot of work to do in the closing down procedures. He said, and a lot of the staff in the Ministry of Food were very anxious to get back to their original ministries, to back to normal work. And of course that's creating a lot of temporary clerical work there for them, for people. So he said, I suggest you get in touch with them and explain the position. They might be ready to offer you a temporary job there, which might last a long time, you never know. I did that. Now the Ministry of Food, they took over the building of the new county hall on Thameside at Westminster, which hadn't been occupied by the Great London Council when the war broke out, and of course the government commandeered it for the Ministry of Food, and that's where I first started with them. After an interview, they understood my position and gave me a job there at the Great Three Clock. Well, we worked there. It was very interesting work it was too, and I somehow got into the establishment side of it. Always in the establishment, so that I could work out the orders and that, and qualifications and that of people, I suppose we were there about a couple of years when the Great London Council pressed for occupation of the new county hall. And of course the government realised that they ought to give way, and they didn't. And so they shifted the Ministry of Food staff, which had been reduced quite a bit since I first started there. They shifted us to Grosvenor Gardens, Grosvenor House, and that was a lovely house that was, and we carried on there for about 8 months, and shifted out from there to Embankment Gardens. And but by Hartford Bridge and Waterloo Bridge, and from there, still all along long line, reducing staff. And then we got to... and then the next stage was that we went to... Palace Chambers. Now, that's in Bridge Street, Westminster. And I suppose there were about 20 of us left there. There for a few months, and off we went from there to Victoria Street. And about 20 of us there. And from there, we got down to... we finished up at Board of Trade in one of their sub-basement offices. And we carried on there until the 3rd of January 1924. Got married in 1925. That's right. And of course, my private life been going on all along the line, and we made it the 3rd of January 1925 was when we married. Now I'll stop there and go back and give you some information about my private life. Well, as I was saying earlier, a friend that died of contact, he was only out of the square pushing, as they called it, run after Liberty Girls or whatever they were called. And one evening my sister said to me, I don't know how I was getting on that, and this was in the early, when I was still on leave from Germany. She said, what are you doing? And I said, well, meandering about, trying to get fixed up with a job, but social life seems to be missing at the moment. She said, well, what have you been doing? I said, well, I went out with Tommy for a couple of nights, but he was only interested in chasing girls, and that didn't appeal to me. She said, well, what about you coming up and meeting me outside my firm one evening? I'll introduce you to some girls, reliable girls, and so she said, well, she, my sister was then, she was a very good dressmaker. She was employed with Freshers and Glennies in Conduit Street, just off Regent Street, and a very fine needlewoman. And anyway, she told me, you come up tomorrow and I'll put your uniform on. Because I was leaving the uniform off day after day. But they left work at half past five every day. So I got up there about 5:15 and stood across the road from them, and all of a sudden I looked up, and there they were, all the girls were up the top floor, shaking their over there, hands and that, and flags and whatnot. And then Vanessa came out, and she brought with her two of their good girl models, two of the models of the firm, and also another girl who wasn't a model, but she in other case, she was a very fine needlewoman, and a bit more dumpy than the other two, who was slim and graceful, I suppose. And we stood around for about half hour discussing things and all that. I said, well, you three must be very, very hungry and anxious to get home. What I suggest is that I'll talk it over with my sister and perhaps I can arrange to take each one of you out separately and we'll have a night out at Palladium and discuss things. Well, that was arranged. Oh, we went. Eventually, I took one at a time, leaving the dumpy one, whose name was Miss Gibbs, to the last. And on each occasion, we went into the Palladium first house and saw the show and came out at a coffee or something somewhere, and I saw the people home. But to Miss Gibbs, she appealed to me. She was my kind of girl. And I thought, this is a girl for me. And I found out that she was a mother was a widow, lost a father when he was quite young. They lived in Bloomsbury, Queen Square, Bloomsbury. And, Old Gloucester Street, Red, which led into Queen Square. And the father was a picture frame maker and had a little workshop in Red Lion Court nearby and did quite a lot of work for the big hotels in that area. Anyway, she also had a brother. He was in the forces, and they only had sort of the ground floor in a tenement house in Old Gloucester Street, and they got it furnished as best they could, but they were certainly not top-notchers in the fashion world or anything like that. But they kept a nice, clean home going, and I got to appreciate what they were doing for themselves. And of course, there again, that girl appealed to me, and we decided to go out occasionally. Well, of course, that meant two or three times a week. And we were in the theatre area. We used to go to the Stoll Picture House once a week, and on Saturday nights we'd meet about 2 o'clock and walk around West End and look, see how many people waiting at the galleries, and where there's quite a few, we just joined in. Well, one Saturday night, walking down the Kingsway and then round Aldridge, and came to Strand Theatre, and we looked, and there were very few outside the gallery, so we joined in the queue. And it happened to be Shaw's Pygmalion on there. It was the first London showing, I understood. And it only just started, but it had got a fair report in the paper when it... anyway, we got there, and we thoroughly enjoyed it, and... As you know, it was eventually turned into a musical, My Fair Lady. And we made sure of seeing that several times. Well, then, of course, we met their friends, and then we tried make a circle of friends, and of course, Flowers, I called her eventually. She wanted to take me round to meet her relations. Now they had a aunt and uncle living in some buildings in Rosebery Avenue. Now he was a lamplighter for the Oban Council, and we went round there one evening. Of course, he was out doing his job, and they also had some other visitors at the time. Of course, it was only a small place, these buildings, and I happened to be standing around when he came home and from doing his job, and he sat down and he looked over and looked at me. He said to his wife or somebody, "Who's that fellow over there with a college forehead?" So, of course, of quite an merriment. So Flo chipped in, "Well, some my boyfriend." "Oh, good for you. Pleased to meet you," and all sort of business. Anyway, the royal relations that we saw it from time to time, my Flo's side. And of course we used to go to form circles with other friends and that. And eventually we thought in terms of getting married. We were engaged, and the point is trying to get accommodation. Well, my brother and his wife were in a three-story house in Clapham, near the Common. And in November, that was November 24, there was an election on. I don't know if it was a general election or a local election, by-election. I forget now. I know that the people in the house where my brother was, occupied the middle floor. The couple who had the top floor were staunch socialists, and they were having election in the area. It couldn't have been the general election, it must have been a by-election. And they'd put up bills in their front window in the top floor supporting the Labour candidate. Of course, the landlord of the house, he was a police inspector and a staunch socialist, and he objected, and he told them so, and they had quite a bit of a discussion. Eventually the landlord said, "Well, if you're not prepared to take them down," he said, "I'm afraid I'll have to ask you to go." Oh, they didn't worry about them. They said, "Okay, we could soon find a flat elsewhere." And off they went. As soon as the coast was clear, my brother got in touch with me and suggested I come down and see the landlord. And he says they'll let the flat to us. So, of course, we were quite excited. This must have been about the end of November in 1924, and I went there, excuse me, and saw him and discussed the position, and he offered the flat to me at a rental of 12 and 6 a week, which I thought was very reasonable. And So we naturally were got quite excited about it, so we thought better start making arrangements. Of course there was a lot to be done, getting furnished on that and sort of else, deciding what to bring in and what not, and eventually we got we spent most evenings over there sorting things out, and